Hey everyone, welcome to the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the mini show for the month, in which we discuss a variety of different topics, mostly what we've been playing though. And this week I have a special guest joining me in lieu of the regular crew here. Do you prefer to go by Jody or Crusher?
You can just call me Jody on this, it's fine.
Hi, Jody, he's a friend of mine on Miiverse, and he plays a lot of Nintendo games, and we got a whole lot of games that we wanted to cover here. But first, before we dive into it, I wanted to ask you a few questions about yourself, so that you know, everyone kind of gets an idea for who you are. First up, how long have you been gaming?
I'd probably say, I'm 27 years old now. You know, as far back as I can remember, you know, I remember being 4 years old and getting the Sega Genesis, and, you know, the NES probably around the same time. You know, I may have had the NES already, you know, but I had Sonic 2, I had Metroid, I had the original Super Mario Brothers, Duck Hunt. So, you know, I'd probably say, like I said, age 4, and you know, I've never really skipped a beat with it. You know, I was constantly getting consoles and everything like that. So, I mean, it's been a consistent part of my life, you know, forever.
And you mentioned having a Genesis and an NES. Did you have a Super Nintendo around the same time as well, or was that a little bit later?
Yeah, you know, like I said, I want to say that, you know, I think my parents may have had the NES at that time, but I remember getting, you know, I specifically remember opening up that Sega Genesis that came with Sonic 2. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd say maybe a year later or so, even the next Christmas, I got the Super Nintendo. And, you know, shortly after, you know, and it is pushing memory, but shortly after I got the, you know, like Mario World, Super Mario World, and I got the Indiana Jones trilogy game.
Nice.
Which was awesome. Zombies Ate My Neighbors, you know, like I remember getting those games because, like, my birthday is in November, Christmas is obviously in December. So I remember getting a lot of the games between those 2 months close together.
Do you have a particular favorite genre or maybe your favorite developer?
No, I mean, not really. It's really hard to, I mean, there's several developers I like as far as genre goes. You know, I mean, I'm open. I love most all genres. I really like most all genres. As far as love, you know, if I had to pick one, it would probably be, you know, RPGs. I know that's kind of a vague because there's so many different, you know, subtypes, but, you know, just RPGs in general. I mean, I love shooters, I love strategy games, I love action adventures, platformers, but, you know, I consider myself probably, you know, loving RPGs more. And developer, there's several. I mean, you know, spanning outside of, of course, Nintendo, I like Blizzard Entertainment. I like, you know, id Software, but I love Nintendo as a first-party developer probably more than anything. Monolith Soft, there's several that, you know, it's really hard to pick one.
What game do you think you've spent the most time playing?
Overall?
Let's exclude Pokemon because, me personally, I've probably sunk over 200 hours just into breeding. So let's say any game besides Pokemon.
Would you say, like, you know, like on Nintendo console or
sure.
anything?
Yeah. Both. Let's do Nintendo console and then just anything.
Okay. Yeah. Nintendo console. Like you said, excluding Pokemon, because that would probably be it. I'm trying to think. You know, it's really hard to pick one. Sorry, I should have even thought of that.
All right.
But Shin Megami Tensei 4, I put a ton of hours into. I'd probably say. If I had, like I said, it's from what I can remember, Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate on, you know, both the Wii U and the 3DS, because I was constantly switching my save file because I want to say over 500 hours into it.
Nice.
So that would probably be the one. And outside of Nintendo consoles, which it's been years since I even touched it, but World, you know, the wife and I were big on World of Warcraft for like 7 years or so.
Oh, good.
Which was, you know, a fun game, great game in its time, you know, and it's still around, but it's not the same, you know. Nintendo first.
All right, so why don't we move into the regular show here? I usually like to begin these mini shows, which is kind of a misnomer because they usually end up being our longest shows. I like to open them with the Club Nintendo games that and swag that have been recently added to Club Nintendo for those reward coins. First up, Yoshi from the NES is now available on the Wii U Virtual Console for 200 coins. Kid Icarus Uprising is available on the 3DS Virtual Console for... I'm sorry, not Kid Icarus Uprising. Wow, that would be amazing. Kid Icarus of Myths and Monsters from the Game Boy is available on the 3DS Virtual Console for 150 coins. Number Battle, the DSiWare game, is available on the 3DS and DSi for 200 coins. And Bonsai Barber is available on Wii U. The WiiWare game is available on Wii and Wii U. I guess technically Wii U. I mean, they advertise it on their website like it's available for Wii U, but you still have to boot into Wii mode and go into the Wii U or the Wii shop channel. But you can get that for 250 coins. Have you ever played any of those four?
Yeah, I have Yoshi on my 3DS already from, I guess, the Ambassador program.
The Ambassador game, yeah.
Yeah, and they did an update on it recently. I noticed, like, I guess when it hit, probably to add Miiverse support, but they, you know, I noticed that, like, when I went to open the game up, you know, boom, it did a pretty big, well, I don't know if it was a big, but it took a while to do an update. But, yeah, I played the Yoshi game, and probably... I remember playing Kid Icarus on the Game Boy, you know, because I still have my original Game Boy, but I never owned it. I think I always borrowed it from my friend. I don't remember beating it, but I remember playing it, and it was always really fun. If it's the same one I'm thinking of, I think there's probably just one. But yeah, the Yoshi game was always a lot of fun.
I think the cool thing about having Kid Icarus Uprising on the 3DS is that you're able to have those save states. And it's a game where you can sink a lot of time into just kind of grinding out by killing enemies in the beginning. But having to like sit through and like have an entire playthrough on a cartridge, you know, we don't really have time for that anymore as adults. So having those save states would be really handy for that one. I never actually played Number Battle on DSiWare, and I never played Bonsai Barber on WiiWare either. But Bonsai Barber is one that I'm kind of eyeing because I have like... 1,300 coins just kind of sitting around. So I think I might spend a few and grab that one just to kind of see what it's like.
Yeah, it looks, I was looking at it as well. You know, I'm back up to, I wanted that Yoshi box or the green Mario box.
Yeah.
I'm back up to, I think like, no, I'm not at 700 coins yet because I usually waited. I mean, I was short getting the Luigi statue. I wanted that, but, you know, I got a couple of the Pikmin 3 bags. I got, like, that 3DS XL charger. You know, I got the Zelda poster set, which is still in the shipping container. You know, I got several things off of it. I got two of the 3DS game card cases, which I really love because I still have the first one. So I kind of blew my points, but those games are always really great, and, you know, I love the, you know, I sit there and refresh the page all day when they come out, but yeah, that Bonsai Barber, back to that, you know, something I'm looking at, so I'll have to, if you do get it, I'll have to, you know, see what you think about it.
Yeah, I'll keep you posted. Maybe we'll add a Miiverse community for it.
Yeah, I'm surprised they did that. You know, it's like they put it on Yoshi on Club Nintendo, and the next day, I mean, was there already a Miiverse community for Yoshi, or?
I'm not sure. I don't know if they added it when Miiverse went onto 3DS because it was an Ambassador game. I'm not sure exactly what route they took with that, but it's just funny that there's one for Yoshi, the NES game, but there's not one for Shin Megami Tensei 4.
I know.
That's just so bizarre.
Yeah, and I thought it was weird because, you know, I always check those updates, and I checked it, you know, let's say yesterday was Tuesday. I checked it Monday, there was nothing. I checked it Tuesday, and then boom, there was Yoshi. It's like they updated the game after it hit Club Nintendo. You know, it may be not, but it was just kind of a coincidence.
All right, so should we, let's move ahead into Bravely Default.
Okay.
So I've clocked about 45 hours. How far have you gotten in the game?
I'd probably say as far as game time, probably you know, I want to say between 50 and 60 hours. Wow. I'm only in chapter 5 though. I think I remember seeing you complete chapter 5, so that's where I am. You know, there's so much with really, and I did it with Shin Megami and Monster Hunter as well. Well, not Monster Hunter, but Shin Megami and other Atlas games is, you know, I'll be playing it and I'll be sitting in the living room. So much stuff's going on, and I just zone out, run around and grind near the outside of a town, go back in, go sleep in the inn, come back out. So that's a lot of my time doing that, getting money, buying the new items, and really just sometimes I just zone out and even do that, just go out and grind. So that's where a lot of the extra hours come from. But
there's a lot of places in Bravely Default where it's really easy to do that. Like, it's really easy to go out there and grind and set up your auto battle, which is a really nice feature. And just kind of lose track of how much time you're spending in it. I've completed chapter 6, but pretty much all throughout chapter 6, I wasn't doing any grinding. I just kind of wanted to get through that particular chapter because we're going to try to avoid spoilers this time, even though a couple weeks ago I got really deep into spoilers. We're going to try not to this week. Chapter 6, some really interesting things happen with the narrative that really pushed me forward in trying to get to the next spot.
Yeah, that's kind of the way. That's one of the main reasons why I just stop and grind, is because once you kind of, you know, in this game especially, once you kind of hit that groove where it's like, you know, you go to a town, you know, it kind of enter sort of a new quest type deal, and then all of a sudden it's like the story is just rolling. You just want to keep playing, and then all of a sudden the next boss you fight just wipes you out, and it's like, you know, wow. So that's why I kind of stop and grind, just so I can just not have to worry about it in between, you know, major events and stuff.
Now, I'm still trying to avoid spoilers here. I'm liking the game a lot more than I did in chapter 5, and I'm really trying to dance around some stuff. I was a little bit down on the game when I was in the middle of chapter 5 because it was doing some things gameplay and narrative wise that were really just kind of bogging me down. Chapter 6 changes enough to really keep things interesting, even though it does get a little bit repetitive. But having seeing the subtle changes between chapter 5 and chapter 6 really brings more focus on how different things are between chapter 4 and chapter 6.
Yeah.
As best you can you describe what you think of kind of the shift in narrative in chapter 5? Did it frustrate you at all, or you just kind of go with the flow?
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, I can definitely understand what you're talking about, because it seems to go from kind of a steady pace to more of at least to me, in my opinion, it seems to be kind of the reward is significantly less. I mean, it seems like I remember having to do a couple things, and it may even be late in chapter 4 or 5, I can't remember, but it's like I have to, you know, go somewhere to do something, and I'm there for a second, all of a sudden I gotta spend forever trying to find something. It seems like I'm more trying to find and figure out what to do next than it is actually having to, whereas earlier in the game where it kind of points you in the direction. And you know, it's not that big of a deal, because I don't always need an arrow to tell me where to go. But at the same time, it's, you know, when you're on a schedule and stuff like that. But it does seem to kind of pace off a little bit. But I just try to make myself, you know, stay motivated and keep playing it.
So do you turn off the little markers that tell you where to go next in your quest, or which marks the side quests and stuff?
I don't turn them off. I guess I just don't really ever notice them. I mean, I don't ever use them. When it does pop up and tell me on the map, go here, I kind of just ignore them. I mean, I kind of know that's where to go anyway at the time, but I don't manually turn them off or anything in options, if that's even a function.
So you take time to just kind of walk around and explore either way?
Yeah, I definitely try to. I mean, especially when I'm grinding. I mean, like I said, I will walk back and forth outside of a major town, but I try to explore too. I like to walk around. I mean, especially when I'm in a dungeon, you know, I like having that with my ranger class, you know, where it shows you all the ability, where it shows all the chests in the area. So I like to be able to go around and make sure I get all those, even though I'll fight, you know, 15, you know, monsters more than I would if I didn't. So
right, and I really like the way that the game does things to suit different play styles. Like, you can turn off those quest markers on or off if you like to have to crawl around to find every little side quest and secret, or you can have them turn on if you just want to be able to go from point to point and collect everything. I like that you can turn up or down the encounter rate, you can turn battles completely off, you have that assist skill to where you can, like, see how many chests are left on a particular floor. So, you know, you have the option to either try to find them all on your own or have the game give you a slight little hint that there's another one lying around somewhere. And I really like that the game goes out of its way to suit different styles like that. So, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah, I was going to say, I agree. I mean, I really do. And it seems like that's kind of like getting to be the trend. I mean, this was a huge step, you know, forward in the genre, but it seems like that's getting to be the trend with a lot of the, you know, handheld games now and doing this. I mean, kind of like with the sleep points, it's like, you know, oh, you don't have time to grind, we'll help you, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, oh, you don't have time to spend hours, figure out where to go, we'll help you. And, you know, the Etrian Odyssey series does a little bit, especially with Untold, does that kind of like a way because it has a few functions that are kind of like time skippers in a way where you can like skip, you know, from one part of a you know, of a dungeon to the other part, just like that. I mean, you know, like a fast travel in the same area, which, you know, frees, I mean, because it, you know, allows you to skip over roaming monsters and stuff like that. But especially with Brave, like I said, Bravely Default, you know, I do like that function because there's times where, you know, you and I both don't always have all the time in the world to sink into these games, but we can still enjoy the story.
Yep. So do you have any, like, favorite job classes that you always roll with?
Yeah, Black Mage is always in. I'm always using the Black Mage. You know, I typically alternate the like I said, the Red Mage and the White Mage. I typically like to switch those out. The Knight class is there. I use it, but I'd say for consistency, probably I think that was the Swordsman. Is that the name of it?
The Swordsman
class. And you know, the Black Mage is always there. The Ranger, I don't like the way the Ranger looks, but I've always used the Ranger now. So, but yeah, mostly just having a secondary mage with the Black Mage, the, you know, a range type class, the Ranger, and then, you know, another like quick melee attacker like the Swordsman or the Thief or something. But
yeah, there's a few that, and you know, this generally isn't my entire party because it's really advantageous to have a mage with you, you know,
yeah,
at least a white mage, if not both a white and a black mage. But I really like the ninja. I really like the evasive skills. I really like the hunter. The hunter's got some really powerful techniques.
Mm-hmm.
The Templar. The Templar is one that I almost always carry with me. Templar with, what's it called? The sword mage that uses sword magic. Always have one of them with me. And I really like the Dark Knight as well, because the Dark Knight's got some techniques where, if you have full HP, you can do dark damage by cutting your own HP by 30%. So if you brave four times, use the 30% cut three times, and then use minus strike, it can do quite a bit of damage that way. So, and you know, you're running the risk that, you know, he's going to die the next turn because he's got like 100 HP left, but you can dish out quite a bit of damage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Do you have any classes that you avoid, like the Plague?
Not really. I mean, I try to raise them all. I mean, yeah, there's some I don't use, like the Bard. I don't really use the Bard class. The Performer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really use that. I mean, I don't know. I just haven't really found a reason to use it yet. But that's probably the only one I can say I avoid. But I just, like I said, I stick to my, you know, what I know, my classes that I'm good that seem to balance out.
Yeah, the Performer is a class that, you know, I wouldn't recommend ever using like as a permanent class member, but
yeah,
as a support skill, it's actually pretty useful. Like there are times where I roll with a white mage with some Performer support skills because magic like Protect and Shell only works on one party member, I guess, until you get a particular skill, But the Performer skills work on everybody, so you can raise everybody's magic defense at once if you need to. So it does have its usefulness, but just as like a single, like if you just had a Performer as a member of your party with no other support skills, yet it's not to your advantage.
But yeah,
I'm actually kind of disappointed with the Time Mage. Like the Time Mage has like your speed and slow, like your haste and slow spells, as well as like your earth magic for some reason, but I don't know. Whenever I use the Time Mage, like, it's the magic isn't really all that impressive. Like, for a while, I tried to roll with a Time Mage with black magic as well, and then I also tried flipping it, but I find myself just not using, like, the haste and slow spells very often. And that's really, like, the main attraction of the Time Mage, I think. So that's one that I'm not really too big a fan of.
Yeah. I mean, those abilities, like I said, there's, especially this game, there's so many different play styles. I mean, that's why, obviously there's a lot of classes, but I mean, that's one play style is using a lot of support. I mean, there's people that do a lot of mass tanking, mass range damage. I mean, there's all different types, but yeah, that's one I'm not too particularly fond yet. I don't even, it's a Time Mage. When do you get that class? What chapter are you?
The Time Mage, chapter one, where it's the Wind Crystal.
Oh, okay. And it's called, the name of the job is called Time Mage?
Yeah, it's when you kill the king of that. Oh, shoot. Stop. That was a spoiler. It's when you...
It's in chapter one, though, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's not a main quest one. It's a side quest one.
Okay. Okay, I must have skipped over that, so I'll have to go back and look at that, because that does ring a bell, but I went through, I've taken some time away from the game, unfortunately, but I was on last night, and I don't have that class, so I need to go do that.
So, have you finished Nerende yet?
What is that again?
The town that you're rebuilding?
Oh, yeah, I have not, I'm sorry. I was like, that sounds familiar. Yeah, like I said, I've Donkey Kong's kept me off of that game for quite some time and some other outside things. But yeah, I'm not quite done with it yet. I have put a lot of time into it, but I'm not quite done. It's not, it's looking better.
Yeah, I mean, it's you get some pretty cool equipment out of it that you can purchase, some really expensive stuff. But yeah, it's a pretty cool little side quest. I like how they bring the Street Pass elements into it, into the game with that a little optional thing.
Yeah, and I love the Street Pass as well. You know, my buddy Jordan and I, he comes over often, so I'm able to Street Pass with him. And I usually have the same amount of people that I Street Pass with on a frequent basis, but unfortunately, Jordan was the only one that bought the game. So, it kind of makes it a little difficult for me to get those, but at least I get it from him on a daily basis, or not daily, but at least a couple times a week.
Have you ever tried inviting net friends?
I don't think I've. No, I haven't done net friends. I used Jordan as one. I've tried. I've watched him invite a net friend. I guess I haven't. I'm not afraid of it, but I watched him. It was kind of funny. He was on a boss fight somewhere in chapter 3 or 4, and he invited. I want to say, I don't know, a black mage, and black mage came in. Deal 9,000 damage, one shot of the boss, and that was the end of it. And I was like, wow, that's something I thought about doing, and I might just do on like a random find, like out in the forest or something. But I don't know if I would do it over like a boss or something. Does it work pretty well?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that like when you net friend or when you summon a friend into a battle like that,
yeah,
there are ways like around breaking the damage limit of the 9,999. And I've passed some people who have had that. I haven't used them because, like you, I like to defeat the bosses on my own. And the bosses are like kind of like little puzzles because they'll come at you in a certain way. And if you do like a little bit of scouting beforehand, like I like to save and then go and like examine the boss, see what kind of moves that they're using, what elemental type moves that they're using. And then I'll reset the game and like equip myself with stuff and with skills that would give me an advantage. So it's fun to do scouting like that and like see how efficiently I can take out a boss with doing as little damage to myself as possible.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I don't really have much else to say about Bravely Default. The game looks great, it sounds great. There's a lot of really good variety to like the gameplay. The way you can customize it, and also to like the environments of the game. There's a lot of really cool variety to it. Any closing shots you want to give to Bravely Default?
I'm just overall just really impressed with the game. You know, I've had people tell me, "Oh, this should have been called Final Fantasy." No, it shouldn't. I mean, that's a grand name, but that's a name they shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't name everything Final Fantasy, you know? I mean, of course there's the Crystal Chronicles and there's a numbered series and a Tactics and there's so many different ones, but this needs to, you know, be and stay its own thing. But I'm just really glad to see, you know, Square Enix, you know, come out and make a game that's just as emotional and deep as like Final Fantasy IV was, you know, because back in the day you see Squaresoft or Enix or, you know, now Square Enix on a box and you're like, man, I know this is going to be good, you know, and not saying that any of their games were bad, or, I mean, but it's like you see Square Enix out there now and because of, you know, purchasing Eidos and so on, you don't know what all you're going to get. I mean, it might be Hitman, you know, like a, you know, shooter action game, you know, it's not the same image as they once were. So it's really nice to see them, you know, go back to roots and make something that's awesome, you know?
Yeah, totally agree. I really like that Bravely Default is its own thing. And you know, I really liked Final Fantasy, The Four Heroes of Light the DS. And this game, you know, certain parts remind me of it, but yeah. I really like that Bravely Default is its own thing.
Yeah, I was kind of, you know, I even had sort of, I love that game as well, sort of a mental thing, thinking it was a spiritual prequel, and I've had some people say that as well, that they thought that. I mean, obviously they're not connected, but, you know, that it does seem like it probably would be. It does remind me of that.
Sure. Well, Bravely Default, I'm much more positive on it than it was like the last time I talked about it. I had a hard time recommending it for $40. Not anymore. It's like, if you have a 3DS, you should absolutely be buying and playing this game. So, should we move into Professor Layton and the Azran Legacy?
Sure. You know, I haven't. I've sunk about maybe 4 hours into this game.
That's four hours than I have.
Yeah, yeah. And as mentioned, I mean, you know, I'm definitely no. I'm no expert on the series. You know, I've played all of them. I've beaten one or two of them, but I have not. You know. Beaten, you know, them all, obviously, but, you know, I've played them on DS and then, you know, the one on 3DS, but yeah, this one, I mean, it's really good. It's something different. I mean, when you're playing games like Bravely Default and, you know, going to the Wii U, playing Donkey Kong, stuff like that, it's a puzzle, you know, it's something different. I mean, you switch out your, you know, game cartridges or your, you know, if you do digital, you know, you switch your, you know, your game app and then all of a sudden it's a whole game. It's a very elaborate, colorful story. You know, it's the level 5, you know, graphic feel, and it seems like it's, I mean, even though, I mean, it reminds me a lot of, like, Studio Ghibli-style animation as well, like with, you know, Princess Mononoke, you know, Howl's Moving Castle, those type of movie graphics, and, you know, the way it all goes together, I mean, it's just such an, you know, enthralling world, you know, universe. I mean, you've got Professor Layton, you know, and you've got the characters in it. I mean, there's, like, little airships and stuff like that. They go from town to town, and, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when you initiate battles, it's like, you know, you run into somebody in town and he's like, you know, you want to fight, let's go. And then it opens up a puzzle and you solve the puzzle and that's how you fight him, which is kind of funny. You know, it's like something as elaborate as, you know, one of the puzzles is, especially in you know, the Azran Legacy, you'll see like here comes an airship and it's a puzzle. And kind of like with, you know, there's several games that have done this, but you have to build a path while the airship is moving across the screen and build a path to sort of navigate it through the clouds and safely land it. And that's part of the puzzle. So it's kind of an active puzzle. Whereas a lot of them, you can just lay the, you know, the DS down and walk away, come back 30 minutes later, and it's still the same spot. So there's just that variety of puzzles. But
is that something new to Azran Legacy, those kind of like active time puzzles?
I think it is. It's the first time I've seen them. Like I said, I haven't played. They weren't in any of the DS ones. I'm not sure about the one before Azran Legacy, but there are a couple of those, you know, from what I've seen, the time puzzles. And it was one of the first couple puzzles, too, you know, like I think maybe puzzle 3 or 4. I'll have to look at that exact number. But, you know, I do remember, like, especially looking at the back of the box and it talking about the unique puzzles and stuff like that. And I think that may be something unique. And, you know, on the topic of puzzles, of course, is the whole digital, the free, you know, the games offers, you know, when you buy the game and set it up, it, you know, you get one free puzzle every day for a year. And, you know, you go in there and you don't have to check it every day like I originally thought. I mean, you go into, you know, I logged on yesterday, first time in, say, 4 days, and I opened it up, and there were four puzzles there, you know, and I just downloaded them, and they're just completely different non-story-related puzzles, and they're fun. I mean, they take time to do and stuff like that. But
That's a really awesome thing that Nintendo or Level 5 did by giving, like, those extra 365 puzzles. That's like a whole extra game.
Oh, no. Especially for, I mean, my wife is a lot better at puzzles than I am. So, you know, she beat all the DS at Professor Layton's, and I know she's going to be playing this one as well. So she's actually more suited to these games than I am. But yeah, she, you know, she's awesome. I mean, she solves these puzzles so quick, it takes me forever. I mean, I'm sitting there, some of these puzzles I have to get on YouTube, and it's like, man, how do I do this? And I watch a guy do it for a minute, and then it just kind of clicks before I finish the video, and I'm able to do it myself. But yeah, it's awesome. I mean, that's a lot of extra stuff to do.
I played the 3DS Professor Layton games, and I am a huge cheater. I would, like, if there was a puzzle I couldn't figure out, I would save the game, go back into it, use as many hint coins as I could to basically have the game give me the answer. Then I would reset the game and just solve it.
Yeah.
You don't get anything. I don't know why I would do that, because you don't get anything for having more hit coins at the end of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of pointless.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's funny because I've collected so many hit coins, hint coins with Azure Legacy, but I haven't used any of them. Because of, you know, YouTube, it's like I'll have my gamepad in my lap, and I'll it's like, man, I can't figure this out. You know, my wife's, you know, with the baby or something, so I can't bother her. So I pull up the YouTube app, and then I'm like, oh, okay, so figure it out. And, you know, I'll watch it, and then I'll do it. I won't just sit there and follow it step by step, and you know, I'll learn how to do it. Of course, I'll forget it the next day, but
right, that's exactly how I beat Toki Tori.
Oh yeah, Toki Tori was a lot of fun. Yeah,
it gets so brutally hard, like halfway through.
Yeah, you're talking about the first one?
Yeah, man. All right. Anything else you want to throw out there about Professor Layton before we move on?
Not really. I'll definitely let you know when I play more of it. You know, I think I just hit the 4-hour mark last night, so I'm still really and like I said, unfortunately, with the 4 hours, a lot of that is spent trying to figure out puzzles. So, right. But story wise, it does seem like it's going to be a very interesting one. I mean, there's, you know, and no spoilers, but I mean, the whole game is based around the whole Azran legacy and them trying to figure out what they keep saying is the last Professor Layton mystery. They keep talking like it's the last game. I'm sure it won't be, but you know, it's got a very deep and seems like a very secretive story. I mean, it seems like it's kind of set up that there's going to be some deception in the game, which, you know, I'm always a fan of, and stuff like that. But it's awesome. I mean, I think they should probably put out a demo for it, hopefully for both of them, you know, because it's a type of game that a lot of people won't know, especially by watching, you know, watching videos and trailers and looking at pictures, what kind of game it is until you actually play it. Even watching, like I said, going on YouTube and watching several videos, I mean, it there's no way to really know what this game's like until you touch it.
Yeah, it's true. When I played the original DS, when I played it several months after it came out, and I had no idea what the game was until I actually was able to pick it up and play it.
Yeah, and that's kind of like the way, I mean, Ace, you know, Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney is as well. I mean, you know what it is, you know what it's going to be like, but for me especially, I had no idea what it was going to feel like until I actually played it.
All right, should we move into our weapon shop, Deomase?
Sure we can. You know, like I said, with that, I mean, you know, you've played a lot more of it than I have. I bought it last night with some deluxe digital promotion points, and, nice. You know, I mean, I was going to get it anyway. I just noticed I had those, so I was like, you know, go ahead and get it now. But, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun so far. I mean, I've only made a sword, an axe, Maybe one more thing, but yeah, it's such a fun game, and this Concall Sam with Professor Layton is something different. I mean, I'm going from from all these deep, dark games and story-driven games, and I can just boom, just make the weapons that I use in Bravely Default, that kind of stuff, and it's really fun. It looks like it's something I think I'll play off and on, kind of like iPhone games to an extent. It's a pick up and play, really quick game.
Yeah, it does have that sort of pick-up-and-play value to it, to where you don't have to play through huge chunks of it at a time. But when I first, as I was playing through it, one of the things I noticed was there was a lot more text than I was expecting. And that's not a criticism. It's just, be aware that there's a lot going on. There's a lot to read. You're talking with the customers, and they got, and some of them, have their own stories going on. Like, there's NPCs that are, actually named NPCs, and they're named customers, and they all have their own quests and their own stories that they're taking part in. And then you also have this activity feed where customers that have rented weapons from you are talking about the quests that they're on. You can kind of check up on that and see how they're doing in their quests and see what monsters they're battling and things like that. So there's a lot to keep track of as you're playing the game. And like I said before, what you're doing is you're renting weapons that you make to these customers that come in, everyone that comes into the shop. And you kind of get hints for what kind of weapon they want from the text, from their story that they're telling you. But then also in the little quest descriptions, most of the named characters will come in and tell you what they're going to be doing. And then they'll leave to give you time to build something and then come back in. Most of the NPCs are just in there. You give them whatever, and then they leave. They won't, leave and come back with the same quest. They'll leave and, come back with something else. So when you're forging these weapons that you're renting out, you start with none. But there's a lot of different stuff you can forge. You mentioned, swords and axes. There's also spears, katanas, blades, daggers, clubs. There's, a ton of different weapons. And some weapons, as you're getting into the game, are mixtures of other weapons. There's a spear katana, and there's blade daggers and things like that. So when you're renting out weapons to customers, you have to keep in mind what weapons have what attributes of what particular class of weapons and what's going to be most advantageous to them, because sometimes they'll prefer one type of weapon, but the enemy they're going up against is going to be weak to another type. So if you can mix and match, that's to your benefit as well. But the actual forging weapons are these rhythm sections where you're hammering away at this molten metal, and you're tapping along on the screen on different parts of the metal along with the rhythm. And there's you can flip the metal around, or you can rotate it to tap at different sections of it. And the better you perform, the better your weapon is going to turn out. I was actually kind of hoping that the game would be more like Elite Beat Agents and have these more elaborate rhythm sections, but there are so many weapons that you can forge that having to go through a 2 or 3 minute Elite Beat Agents level every time you want to do one would be really time consuming. So, that's the trade-off. I hope that one day we get another Elite Beat Agents game, but this isn't the right game for that particular style. So keeping up a good stock of weapons is really good for your shop, because you never know when an NPC is going to come in and want to rent something. So far, though, most of the weapons that people have wanted to come in and rent are swords and clubs and spears. Every once in a while, a dagger or a katana. There's one named customer who's a regular who will come in and want to rent a katana. The weapons will level up when they get used and returned. So when they're done using them, they bring them back, and they'll have gained attributes. If the character fails on their quest, you'll lose the weapon, and you either have to forge a new one or carry on in the game without remaking it. And when they return them, you also have this option to polish them, which further enhances them when you want to send the weapon out again, if you want to rent it to somebody else for the same person. So I haven't completely leveled up a weapon yet, but I do have some weapons that are getting really close, so I'm excited to see what happens when they do reach another level. That's another thing that I forgot to mention. Like the weapons, like they'll raise and level incrementally. So in the beginning, you can make level 1 weapons, and you're renting them out to level 1 NPCs. But as you get further into the game, the NPCs will become level 2, 3, and 4, and you can start making like level 2, 3, and 4 weapons. And the name characters gain levels like that as well. But yeah, it's a really fun game. It's got a really cool style to it, a lot of personality. Oh, and there is like a kind of a central story building. Like there's a meter in the top right corner, which indicates how close you are to the return of like the great evil, which is as yet unnamed. So it seems like the game doesn't have like an infinite amount of time that you can spend with it. There is like a ticking clock to it, which, you know, is fine with me. But it's a really cool game. I'm glad we finally got it. This last of the Guild 01 games. So yeah, that's pretty much all I had to say about Weapon Shop. Did you want to add anything else?
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned that, you know, I haven't had a chance to play much of it yet. I'm going to hop on it probably after this podcast. But, yeah, I mean, just so far that I've played in the game, you know, it obviously feels like a level 5 game. I mean, it has that great feel. And, you know, that's one thing I've always loved from level 5 is you know you're playing a level 5 game when you play it. And, you know, it's funny because it has a nice sense of humor to it. You know, from you know, first sword I made, this guy's, you know, walking out doing his quest, and he's like, you know, a kobold appears, and he's like, man, the sword is so swift, and he kills the kobold, and you cheer because, yes, he didn't break my sword, you know, I get my money, yes, which is cool. And also, and you know, to backtrack, in the beginning when the very first customer walks into your shop, he's like, sell me a level 5 or the highest level weapon you can make, and you assess him. He's level 1. You know, I kind of laughed at that. I thought that was pretty hilarious, you know, because, you know, from just even glancing at him, it's like, this guy doesn't look like he'd be that high level, and then it said he was level 1. So there's just some good RPG humor thrown into it, and, you know, for what, $7.99, I mean, it's an awesome buy. I mean, it's definitely a really fun game to cheer you up. You know, if you're in a bad mood or just stressed out, I mean, it's just, you know, whack weapons and improve them. Like you said, polish them. When they bring them back after they've used them, you know, make them new again and sell them. I mean, rent them. It's really fun.
Yeah, the game doesn't take itself too seriously, which is, you know, after like Bravely Default, which has some pretty serious stuff going on in it, it's a breath of fresh air.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, so should we move into Donkey Kong?
Sounds good.
All right, so how's your progress going in Donkey Kong?
I'm sitting in World 6 at the last boss, and, you know, I haven't touched him yet, so I don't know if it's like Mario where I beat him and it opens up another world or whatever, but I'm sitting there. I haven't even started the level, and I'm just sitting at the boss level on World 6. But
nice, we're in the same spot.
Nice. Have you attempted him yet?
I have not, no.
I haven't either. Good, yeah. I've seen some little screenshots here and there from Miiverse, but I haven't, you know, even tried. But, yeah, I went back, and in World 1, I've unlocked all the secret exits. In World 2, World 1 is the only world I've unlocked all the secret exits.
Yes,
in World 2, I've unlocked one. And, you know, and I've unlocked one from every, at least one from every world, except for, I think, maybe three. I haven't really, so I haven't, you know, had a chance to go do all that. But I know, you know, you have to get all the Kong letters to do it, or the puzzle pieces. I think it's the Kong letters, right?
To unlock. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the Kong letters, because I don't have all the puzzle pieces in World 1 yet.
Okay, yeah, I don't think, well, I think I do actually have all the puzzle pieces in World 1, but that's the only world I do, because I went back, and I think I even used Squawks the Bird, maybe for one level, which is cool.
Those puzzle pieces are pretty well hidden.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I found some by accident, you know. I jump up, and in one spot where it's a tiny little bush, it looks like it's just background, you know, picture, and then I'll pound the ground, boom, there's a puzzle piece. But I like having a funky shop. Reminds me, and even though it wasn't a shop, it reminds me a lot of Donkey Kong Country 3 when Funky had his plane there, and it was just fast travel in Donkey Kong Country 3 for Super Nintendo. But still, it kind of brings back that memory, and I've always been a fan of Funky Kong. I like him, you know. I like racing as him, and you know, Super Mario Kart on the Wii. And you know, I just really like Funky. I mean, he's probably, outside of Donkey and Diddy, my third favorite Kong.
Yeah, I'd rather have him as a playable character over Cranky.
Yeah, Cranky was really fun to play, though. I mean, you know, coming off DuckTales, I mean, you know, was kind of, I guess, gave me some experience in using him. So I was able to, you know, do the Scrooge, you know, the Scrooge jump and kind of go into Cranky, and it's like, oh, cool, you know, it's like they play the same. So, and, you know, for people that haven't played the DuckTales game or, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, it seems like it might be a little hard to get used to with Cranky, especially riding on Donkey Kong's back.
Yeah, and you know, I don't mean to say anything mean about Cranky. That was more supposed to be nice to Funky. Yeah. But Cranky, like, he's got a couple levels where having his pogo ability allows you to go places you wouldn't be able to because you're able to, like, pogo on thorns. But as I've gotten further into the game, I haven't really seen a whole lot of places where that would add anything. And, you know, that's it's not a terrible thing. I mean, it'd be cool if there was more of those places where you could only get to as Cranky. But, like, for like Diddy and Dixie, there aren't really a whole lot of places where you can get to as only them. So it's not like he's, like, a gimped character or anything like that. It's pretty much there's a good balance between the three, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some people feel that Dixie Kong's, you know, ability makes Diddy Kong kind of worthless. I don't agree. I mean, yes, she can fly higher and a little bit longer if you tap instead of hold it down. But, you know, Diddy's a lot faster with it. I mean, it's especially doing, like, you know, these levels where you have falling platforms, you got to jump left, right, and you have to do that. You know, Diddy Kong's a lot better at that, you know, especially riding on Donkey's back than Dixie is because, you know, with her, you got to jump, wait a second, her hair spins, and then you move up. You know, by the time that's done, the world's fallen and you're dead. You know, so it's always nice to have that huge speed, you know, advantage with Diddy Kong, and especially his cartwheels, stuff like that, you know, as a standalone character. But there is a great balance between the four, and you know, even though we've never been able to play Cranky before, he still feels nostalgic, you know, and playing as Dixie again since, you know, Donkey Kong Country 3, you know, playing as her again felt very, you know, it felt at home. You know, it felt like, wow, I've played her before. This feels great. So I was just overall really impressed with the game. I was really happy. You know, I felt that difficulty-wise, it perfect. You know, I've always thought Donkey Kong Country Returns on the Wii was probably a little too hard. You know, I felt that the one they brought, when they brought it to 3DS and they added that, not the original mode, but the new mode where it gave you an extra heart, you know, that kind of made it a little bit easier, but I felt like this game overall, bosses, levels, everything was the perfect difficulty. It wasn't as easy as Super Mario 3D World, but it wasn't as hard as Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Yeah, I totally agree that it was challenging enough and also rewarding, but not frustratingly so. The only, like, for example, the boss fights, the only boss fight that I really had a little bit of trouble with was the big blowfish boss. For some reason, he was just getting to me. But, you know, after playing him for a little bit and figuring out his patterns, I was able to get through him all right. The other bosses, you know, they follow really specific patterns, and they kind of go in three stages. So once you kind of learn those patterns, it's not too tough to get through any of them. I actually can't think of any of them that I didn't get through in maybe three or four tries. But, you know, checkpoints would have been kind of nice, like a little halfway point through the boss. But, you know, the bosses don't really take that long once you know what they're going to do.
Yeah. And I agree, too, especially with I'm in the same spot as you. I mean, the blowfish, you know, because it's an underwater boss. So, you know, you're underwater with it. And, you know, it was the only one that took me more than, like you said, three or four tries. You know, it was the only one that took me that. And, you know, it was kind of, it did get a little frustrating when I take it to, say, what, phase three, and it's like you die, and you're like right there. What you feel at the time is the last hit. And it's like, let's do this. I have one heart. You know, you go in, and it turns. You hit that you know, that spike. Boom, you're dead. And it's like, you know, and then, you know, you're like, man, I got to start all over. You know, this blows. And then you go back in, and all of a sudden, you know, you blink and you're in phase three again because you know what to do.
Yeah.
So you know how it's going to be. But, you know, that boss fight, I played it like it was late when so I played it, you know, didn't beat it, you know, died five times, and went to work, came home, you know, hopped on it and beat it in like the first try or whatever of the next day. So nice. It's usually how it goes.
Nice. So, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, you know what was giving me the most trouble with the Blowfish boss? Me, like an idiot, forgot that you could hold down A to swim faster, so I kept on tapping A.
Oh, yeah, and spinning.
It had, well, no, not the spin, but just like the swim faster button. Anyway, and eventually, like, you know, it had similar results, but it flows much better, especially when trying to change direction if you just hold down A.
Yeah.
Have you messed with your control setup at all? Are you just using like the default analog stick?
I just use the default. I haven't really even thought to do that. I usually don't touch the controls in games. I mean, in shooters I will, in shooter games I will. Like first persons, I'll play with the controls, but I'm usually a default type guy. Even with sensitivity, you know, sometimes on shooters I will increase it, but not with Donkey Kong. I haven't touched the controls at all.
It's kind of got a weird setup. I usually play with the default analog stick setup, and then after playing a few levels when I first got it, I tried switching to the D-pad setup because I thought it would be kind of cool to use the D-pad. But it did this weird thing where it inverted your roll button and the grab button. So, like, the roll buttons became the shoulders and the grab button became X and Y on the face buttons. And I thought just felt like a weird setup. So I changed back to the analog stick. And actually, the other day, I found in the options menu a ways to further customize the controls. So I set up one that really works well for me, where I'm still using the D-pad, but the grab and the roll buttons aren't inverted. And the really nice thing about it is my custom control setup was saved automatically. So now when I go into the game, that's the first option I have to choose from if I want to use it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I thought that was a really cool thing to do, just to save it automatically. So, yeah. One thing I was kind of hoping for the game was more minecart levels. I mean, what have we had so far? Maybe three or four?
I'm glad you want that, because, you know, I'd like some more. I mean, I wouldn't want them to overdo it. Yeah. You know, I've talked to some people who have, you know, played Donkey Kong as long as, you know, I have, and you have, you know, from Super Nintendo era. And you know, one of my friends was kind of like, he liked the Minecraft levels. And, you know, of course, they're new, they're fresh, but he felt they should retire the Minecraft levels. I don't think so. I think that's a staple of Donkey Kong Country games. Doesn't need to go anywhere, you know. It's right. It feels right, you know. But like you said, yeah. I think there's probably four Minecraft levels. You know, one thing that I would like to see on a different note, if that's okay, is, you know, the I guess you can call them their companions or friends. You know, I'd like to see
the animals.
You know, yeah, I mean, the animals, right? I mean, it's always love Rambi, but, you know, I'd love, you know, the swordfish. It's right there on top of my head. What's the swordfish's name?
I can't think of it either.
Man, I just said it in the Miiverse post the other day.
But yeah, and then the ostrich would be cool to see the ostrich come back. It would add a really cool variety to some of the levels. Swimming levels, and you know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, yeah. Unguard the swordfish. It just clicked. Unguard the swordfish.
Yes.
Yeah, that I was kind of like, I don't know. There were times where I was in a water level, and those water levels super amazing, so good. You know, from the first time I got to dive into the water, I just had goosebumps. I was so happy because there was not water in Donkey Kong Country Returns, so it was great to jump in the water here. But yeah, I was kind of. It got to a point where so much stuff's happening in a certain level, and I just crossed my fingers and was like, please, Unguard, pop up. He didn't. You know, I felt like they couldn't hide that from somebody. Somebody would, you know, pop it out on the internet, you know, spoil it. But I'm hoping, like, I'd like to see them again. You know, the ostrich and Unguard, the swordfish. And, you know, I would love to see the return of the Kremlins, man. You know, King K. Rool and the Kremlins. you know, because as far as I know and from everything I've read, you know, Nintendo have all those rights, you know, and Rare doesn't have any of that stuff. So I think they just want to do something different with, you know, Country Returns. But I'd love to see them again, the Gremlins.
Yeah, it'd be really cool. What else? What else? So, let me check my notes here. We mentioned the collectibles already, the Kong letters and the puzzles, but there's also like little collectibles that you can get in the shop, the little toys and the pictures and dioramas you can get for completions.
Have you bought many of those? From the Funky Shop? Have you bought many of those with your coins?
Yeah, I've gotten quite a few of the little toys. I mean, they're pretty cool. They're just, you know, more stuff you need to get to 100% complete the game.
Yeah, yeah. What about the controls? You know, what do you? I mean, there's so many different ways to play the game as there are with most Wii U platformers. But what would you say is your favorite way to play? What is your favorite controller to use in Donkey Kong? You know, Country, Tropical Freeze.
I really like the gamepad. I actually don't have a pro controller yet. I'm probably holding out for Smash Brothers to grab one of those. But I tried the Wii Remote Nunchuck with when I had a little co-op going, but yeah, you know, I think I prefer the button presses to the motion to do the rolls. The motion controls worked just fine, and they were fine on the Wii, but my personal preference is just to press the button.
Yeah, yeah, I'm the same way. You know, my controller of choice is the Pro Controller for this. You know, I've played with all the controller methods. You know, the gamepad works great. You know, I love the Wiimote Nunchuck. That's what I played with. That's what I use for Donkey Kong Country Returns. And you know, I feel like I'm good at it, but there were times where I would be playing that method. I would be playing with that control setup, and I'd be in a level, and I'd get kind of frustrated because of the fast-paced level, and I'm dying. And I'd switch to the Pro Controller, and I'd beat it first try. So I felt, I'm my favorite, and I'm best with the Pro Controller. But the gamepad, you know, feels so great. I do prefer pressing those buttons, you know, old school, to the jump, you know, and to roll and stuff like that. But the control, and you know, I wasn't as much fan with using a D-pad over the analog sticks either. I mean, it was fine, you know. I mean, the D-pad's very, you know, it's very accurate, but you know, I always prefer those analog sticks for these kind of games now.
All right, anything else you want to mention before we move on?
I think I think we're good. I mean, it's just such an amazing game. You know, probably it's definitely one of my favorite Donkey Kong games of all time. You know, I like it more than Returns, you know, if I had to pick. And, you know, Donkey Kong 64 and the original Donkey Kong Country are always, I mean, I hold those in the highest regard as well. So this is up there with them to me.
Yeah, it looks great. It's got a really great soundtrack, a good amount of content. Yeah, this is a game, if you have a Wii U, you should absolutely own it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you want to get into a little bit of Etrian Odyssey?
Yeah, sure.
I played the demo of Etrian Odyssey Untold, and I was actually wondering, do you play story mode or classic mode or both?
Well, probably just I play just the story mode. You know, you have the option to switch, but I don't have Etrian Odyssey 4. I've got the limited edition for Christmas of Untold finally. But yeah, I played I played 20-30 hours into both demos, and wow. You know, I played Etrian Odyssey 1 on PS1 a long time ago, and I played 2 and 3 briefly, maybe at a friend's house, so I didn't really get to dive into it. But this is, you know, Etrian Odyssey 1, or Etrian Odyssey Untold, of course, you know, the one I'm playing now is a remake of the first one. And, you know, which is awesome because, you know, they came out sort of close together within, you know, I think not even a year apart.
Yeah, yeah, it was strange because one came out like in March and the other in like August.
Yeah, and that confused a lot of people, but, you know, the thing about that is Etrian Odyssey 4 is the newest game of the series, and Etrian Odyssey Untold uses that same engine, but it's a remake of the first one, but they've added a story mode. The first one originally did not have a story mode. It was just dungeons and dungeons and dungeons, and it had some text that was kind of like their story, but this one has, you know, awesome FMV videos, animations, you know, it has all kinds of stuff. But yeah, they, you know, as you've mentioned before, you know, one good thing about this and Bravely Default is the demo stuff, the demo save files roll into the full game, you know, into the full game. And, you know, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon did that also. You know, I'm loving that, you know, the way demos are doing that now. But yeah, it's such a fun game, and again, it's different because it's a first-person dungeon-crawling role-playing game. You know, I'm maybe, I don't know, 25, 30 hours in Detronasi. Bravely Default kind of, you know, made me put it down for a little bit, and I feel bad about it. But, you know, it's another game by Atlas. The story so great. The music is amazing. You know, you're roaming through, you know, you're walking through this huge forest, and it is in first-person mode, so it kind of gives you a little bit of a closer view and depth to what's going on. I mean, you know, I'll have my headphones on, and the sound is awesome because I'll hear some rumbling in the grass. You know, you'll turn the camera, you'll look over the grass, you'll see, like, something off in the distance, and boom, it's just this huge minotaur creature attack you. And it has, you know, a very traditional battle system, where you have to, you know, select your attacks, and you know, you have your, you know, four people in your party, and you have different classes that you can switch around, you know, mage-type classes, ranged, you know, melee, ranged, you know, magic casters, like healers, tanks, that kind of stuff. But it's such a good game, you know, and I really want to, once I'm done with it, I'm going to pick up Etrianossi 4 for sure. But, you know, this game, I mean, it's just, you know, I was really impressed with it overall, and, you know, it's graphics are amazing, you know, inside and outside of the videos, and it has another, it has a very Shin Megami Tensei and Persona-like feel to it as far as a story, because there's so much going on, and the character development is so great. You know, you fall in love with the characters, and, you know, when two of the characters get in fights, don't get along, and you really, the whole party feels that, and it's just, and, you know, also you make the decisions. It's a big part of this game. You know, you're constantly tasked to make choices and decisions, and that affects things. And, you know, sometimes you think it won't, but it does. You know, you'll get asked a question, let's say, for lack of a better, I can't think of their names at this time, but, you know, one of the party members will ask me, you know, she's like, what do you think about, you know, my hair or something like that? And I'll say something like, you know, if I like, if it's a party member I like, I'm like, you know, looks great, or I'll insult her as a joke, you know, something like that. And it kind of upsets her, and then she takes it out on another party member, and the next time we get in battle, he's like distracted, doesn't really attack, which is kind of funny, but just for that one, you know, one little battle session. So there's just little stuff like that that's very interesting and very original to this series.
Very cool. I mentioned before I played the demo. I was playing in story mode, and the only other exposure I've had to the series is when I played the first entry in Odyssey on the DS. And I also played a little bit of the demo of 4. One thing I did appreciate about Untold is that there's a real quick variety to the level layout. Like in the first entry in Odyssey on the DS, you're pretty much thrust into the forest, and you're going into the forest and like going down levels in there, and nothing, like the environments don't really change a whole hell of a lot. But in Untold, you go into this forest, and then you're like set into like these futuristic ruins where you're doing some other stuff, and I really appreciated the variety of that.
Yeah, that I mean, it definitely has that. I mean, even going from the forest, because you're gonna walk through a lot of very similar looking territory, and then you're gonna get, I mean, there's some ruins and stuff, and that's, you know, and one thing I failed to mention is you know, half the game is map making. You know, yeah. On the bottom, I mean, you're as you walk through these dungeons, you know, you have to chart out a course, you know, where you've walked to. You know, if you see a crack in the wall that can be broken from the other side, you mark that on your map, and then you eventually go around and break through it. So that's always a thing, too. And even though you do have that option to make a map, you know, where you won't get lost, it's still awesome to see how much detail and thought they put into crafting the terrain and everything, because, you know, you know, it gets to a point where when I'm playing and I've been through the same area a couple times, I don't have to use the map because I know, you know, when to go left, right, straight. You know, I know when to how to navigate it because it's so different. It feels like I've been there, I lived there. You know, it's really nice.
Yep, the map making is one of the things I like most about. It's really fun.
Yeah, it is. Too. Yeah, I love it too. And especially, I mean, I don't have the best handwriting, but I love how it helps guide you when you draw straight. And for me, I'll draw straight, and it goes. You know. Let's say north and like northeast, and I'm drawing off, and then all of a sudden it just kind of corrects you in a way, kind of like an autocorrect for bad typers and stuff. But you can draw, but it's not necessarily like using, you know, like on Miiverse and Swapnote, drawing out notes. You know, it kind of helps you and kind of guides you along a grid, which is awesome, especially with making a very neat looking map. Yeah. Otherwise, it would be very. I mean, it would look like a kindergartner drew it for me. You know, if I didn't have that.
All right. So should we jump into Pokemon for a few minutes?
Sure. How about it?
So, what are you up to in Pokemon?
Right now, same thing. I've been doing. I mean, of course, once I beat Elite Four, I put it down for a little bit, picked it back up. But you know, I did go through the Battle Chateau, and it took me a little bit of time. But I hit the Grand Duke rank in the Battle Chateau, which is awesome because I made several million gold. And you know, I take that gold and I go to the highest shops and buy the most expensive clothes, stuff like that. I mean, I bought some crazy stuff with it, but I think what I'm wearing now is even some cheap stuff. I mean, it just what I felt looked good, what looked the best, except for the bag. I think I have like a $2 million bag or something. Nice. I walk around with. But yeah, I do a lot of IV breeding right now, you know, and help my friends as well. You know, I have like a German 6-IV Ditto and a Japanese 6-IV Ditto, and you know I have a box of Dittos that are 5 and 6 IVs of all different natures. So basically, I'm just breeding, and then I'm raising. You know, I have a box of battle ready guys that are all level 100, and you know either between 4 and 6 IV and all EV'd out 100 guys, and then I have a box of ones that I'm just constantly leveling, like, you know, ones that I ultimately want to use that I've already bred them and I'm just leveling them up. So I usually try to, especially in the battle, you know, the Battle Chateau, I'll put 5 level 10 guys in there, and then I'll throw in that shiny Mew, and I'll kill, you know, I'll go through and just wreck the Battle Chateau, and each battle takes forever because, of course, I'll one shot the next guy, and I sit there have to spam A to, you know, for all my guys to level up and stuff with the XP share. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like doing a lot of breeding. You know, every day I play, I go check the lottery vendor in Lumino City. You know, I always like to do that because that's a great way to get, you know, PP ups and PP maxes. You know, I've been getting a lot of PP maxes, which is awesome. And you know, I've maxed out my style, my rollerblade, stuff like that. So I do online battles a good bit. You know, my battle box has my black white two team, which I'm really breaking apart, but it's just I brought them over just to use them. It's that Virizion, the Latios, the Charizard, the Blastoise, the Weevil, and the Raichu.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar with them.
And you know they're ones I use. I mean, they're the same ones I used in Black 2, and I'm really wanting more. I mean, those they have that none of them share the same weakness. They're a balanced team, but I want to go. You know, I want to either bring it probably my Delphox or something. And you know, my shiny Mew, I traded for my shiny Mew, and it's a lot of fun. But I don't use her to battle. Or I think it's her. I don't use her to battle too much. I just use it sort of for unlimited stuff and Ubers. But outside of that, I mean, I'm working massively on my shiny Pokedex. You know, I was able to complete my national Pokedex and get the shiny amulet, from the professor. And basically, I'm just working on completing it. I think I'm not even 100 shiny Pokemon, so I'm far from it. But I do fish chaining. You know, I'll go and chain and try to catch. And I've caught a few shiny Pokemon. The Friend Safaris, I've caught them. The shiny amulet, of course, it increases your chances of getting shiny Pokemon by a good bit. So that's a good way to do it. and then breeding, you know, with the Masuda method and having a, you know, two different region Pokemon when you breed, you know, with the shiny amulet especially gives you a higher chance to breed shinies basically twice. So, you know, breeding shinies, but, it, you know, I might go through, I think it's like a 1 in 30 chance now, or maybe like a 1 in 50 chance that one of them is a shiny now, I think. I could be wrong about those odds, but I've been getting pretty good. I just haven't done that as much as I needed to.
Well, very cool. That's you've touched on some stuff that we've never actually discussed on this particular show before. You went pretty deep down the rabbit hole of Pokemon.
Sorry.
No, it's all right, man. It's cool. Like, they're like the IV training. That's actually something we've never talked about on the show before. And like breeding shinies. And yeah, it's cool because there's so many different ways to play Pokemon.
Oh no, it's great. And I'm definitely not one of those kind of guys that, you know, I like to recommend and stuff and help my friends. But I mean, there's some guys out there that if you don't IV train and EV train, you're not doing it right. I'm not that kind of guy. I mean, I started out with blue and then red and yellow, and you know, I barely touched EV training a little bit when black came out, but I jumped into it with black too. So I'm still pretty new at it myself. But I'm definitely not, I try not to be an elitist when it comes to that kind of stuff, because I mean, there are some very powerful Pokemon that they've never touched EVing or IVing. I mean, they'll just, you know, and like you said, you've never, you know, I think you said you haven't done much EVing, but your Pokemon smacked the crap out of my Mew and my Pokemon. I mean, when they hit me, it hurts. You know, you don't just wipe it off like nothing happened. I mean, they're there to do damage, especially when they're 100, you know?
Yep. True that. So right now I'm kind of slowly chipping away at my national decks. I finished the first and second generation ones. I finished transferring everyone over, and just like last week I transferred over all of my fifth generation guys. But I've never actually built a living Pokédex. So what happens is then I have to like put guys in the daycare, breed, and then maybe do a little bit of training if it's a three-step evolution Pokémon. So that's kind of what I've been working on, and what I've been trying to do is ones that I'm breeding and like ones that I may want to use again, I put them in the bank, or if they're like a Pokemon that's not available in the game that you have to like transfer over, I like to throw them up on Wonder Trade and, you know, see if somebody needs it. I might be doing something nice for someone else, or I might just be giving them junk. That's the roll of the dice.
Oh yeah, Wonder Trade's awesome, man. Like I said, my buddy and I flooded it. I think I mentioned to you, I would put, I don't know, like, he put, I want to say he put like 300 something in there, and I put about like 100 Charmanders in there. Like, I put like 100, maybe 4 IV or 3 IV, you know, good Charmanders out there. And you know, I actually had a guy that I battled with, was kind of funny, maybe a passerby, but he was like, man, he's like, I think I got a Charmander from you or something, because it, you know, it popped up when you do a Wonder Trade as like a passerby, mm-hmm. And then, you know, he challenged me to a battle, and he was like, man, thank you for this. I was like, no problem, you know, and then, you know, he may have gotten a Charmander from someone else, but it was a odd coincidence that, you know, for that.
Yep. So, and anything else we want to say about Pokemon before we move on?
Not really. I mean, I touched on a lot of different topics, but you know, it's definitely a game that stays in my DS rotation for quite some time. And I was playing Black too until the time that, you know, Pokemon X and Y came out. So it's a game I'm gonna play until the next one comes out. It's just something I've, you know, been doing for forever, and you know, I love it. It's fun being competitive. A lot of my friends play it. They come over, we battle. You know, we trade. It's just awesome.
Yep, it's a game that has so much value to just replaying over and over again. And actually, last week, me and my co-host Ryan, we talked about a Nuzlocke we're doing of the third generation games. And I played a little bit more of that. I'm not going to go too deep into it now, but I'm really enjoying like playing through those third generation games again. I hope to get it remade soon. But I did have my first death in this Nuzlocke run, and it was a guy that I had to sacrifice in order to save somebody else, but it still hurt to do it. You get an attachment to these things, especially when you know that if you're playing by these stricter rules, you can never use them again.
Oh yeah, you have to release them. So yeah, that's I've seen Yeah, I mean, I've seen, I'm well aware of the Nuzlocke Challenge. I've never done it myself. Planning on it. You know, I bought Pokemon Ruby recently. I played Sapphire, but I bought Ruby recently from a retro game store. So I have it in my Game Boy Advance SP right now, so I was even considering doing it there. But
it's tense.
Yeah.
So one thing that I have thought about doing, though, is in a couple of days when the Yoshi 3DS XL comes out, I'm planning on getting that, and then, of course, Yoshi's New Island. And if I register them both, I can get a free copy of Pokemon X, a free digital copy of it. And I was actually toying with the idea of doing a Wonderlock run through, like just getting 6 Pokemon off of Wonder Trade and seeing how far I can get with just them.
That's kind of funny. And you probably, I mean, if you get them early enough, you could probably do very well. I mean, granted, you don't get 6 Magikarps, but, I wouldn't be surprised if you could at least beat, you know, go through the whole game. I mean, just grind them out. Because, I mean, with as many different types and subtypes as there are in Pokemon, I mean, ratio and statistically speaking, from one to trade, I think you probably get a decent balance of guys now.
Yeah.
You would hope anyway, so.
Yeah, might be kind of fun. So, we're running a little bit long here, so I'm just going to skip over Inazuma 11. I played a little bit more of it before we started recording here. I actually played through, it wasn't like a real match, it was just a practice match, but it was like the first actual game that I got to play through, and I can honestly say I have no idea what was going on. But I'm intrigued, and I'm going to keep playing. Like, they're like, you have to control your soccer players. Like, you control, like, where the ball is going to go, but you actually have to, like, call timeouts and, like, coordinate where your players are supposed, like, where you want them to go, and then you pass the ball to them. Anyway, it gets really, like, crazy hectic, and I'm looking forward to getting deeper into it.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun, and it was fun because the day it came out, you know, you posted on Miiverse, I'm downloading Inazuma 11, and I'm like, before I even knew anything about it, I commented on your post, and I was like, what is that? You know, is it any good? And you're like, I don't know, but I must have it, you know? So, and you're like, you said you had the $20, and you're like, I'm gonna download it now. And you know, it looks awesome, and I'm sure it's well worth that $20. So I was considering, you know, I had $10 on my digital deluxe promotion, so I was considering buying it for $10 last night, but I kind of just got weapons, you know, Diamossi first, but it's something I'm definitely gonna get. I just don't know when.
Yeah, and I'll definitely like get back into playing it as well, but you know, it's probably gonna be little by little here. Just start chipping away at it. But do you want to talk about Steel Diver Sub Wars real quick?
Yeah, you know, I'm same boat as you. You know, I played the game. You know, I didn't buy the original Steel Divers when it came out. Of course, it came out at 3DS launch, but you know, I think when I bought my XL, when I bought my 3DS XL, the blue one, I got it for free. So, you know, so it was nice. Cool. I wanted it, you know, when it came out. But when 3DS came out, I bought Rayman 3D. I bought Samurai Warriors Chronicles, and I bought Pilot Wing. So I kind of didn't want to fork out any more money. And I bought a nice case. But yeah, it was, you know, the original was cool. I didn't beat it, but I played, you know, a few hours. But this one is like, you know, like we've mentioned, considerably different because it, you know, it flows different. It feels different. The control's different. I mean, it's just a lot of fun. You know, I don't have the full game. I've just beat all the demo missions, but it feels good. You know, I haven't tried any of the download play stuff yet. I haven't done, I have done a little bit of the multiplayer with my buddy. You know, he came over, and it's a lot of fun. It gets intense because I haven't mastered the controls, so I'm going around, I'm looking, and trying to find him, and he's trying to find me, and, you know, and my wife's trying to find us, and we just shoot, and, you know, hope that we hit each other. Part of it's luck, part of it's, like, flick skill, but, you know, overall, I mean, it looks really good. It's another game I'm planning on buying the full version, but it's something different as well, and it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of fun from what I played.
Yeah, I haven't really messed with the multiplayer part, but the two missions you get for free, well, there's like 3 stages in each mission, and you know, the first one is like a navigation exercise where you have to like move through some rings, and there's some combat to it as well where you have to like blow up some things that are in your way, or maybe there's some enemies coming at you here and there, or like a ship dropping some depth charges. So I actually really enjoyed those, but the arena missions are pretty much all combat based. And You know, the multiplayer, I can see being like more slowly paced and, like as Iwata said, a contemplative first person shooter where you kind of have to think your way through it and lead your target and kind of move in ways to where it would put you at an advantage against your competitors. But the second mission, I felt was just really all about moving around and shooting as quick as you can, especially if you want to get like the highest rank for the level. Like, it gives you 10 minutes to get through, which is plenty of time if you want to take your time, but you only have 5 minutes if you want to get the highest rank, and you kind of have to blast through it if you want to do that. But I don't know. I might get the full version. I guess it depends on how much I think I'm going to spend like playing online.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're playing online with just the free version, you got a severe disadvantage, because there's a bunch of different subs that you can get, and the two that you get from the free version aren't really all that great. Because I was yeah. doing some peeking at like the sub harbor. I'm not even sure what to call it. The stable of submarines that you can choose from, and there's some ones that are pretty impressive, and it makes the default one seem pretty puny.
Yeah. Yes, it's like some of the, you know, iPhone games like Angry Birds Go, you know, with the ones you start out with, and they want you to pay money for the higher or the better ones. But, you know, it's kind of like that. This one's obviously a lot more fair with it, with those kind of purchases and stuff. But yeah, it's awesome. Like yeah. you said, I mean, the stock, you know, both are slower. I mean, I guess it's good that I haven't really seen, you know, it's not like they demoed us the faster one and then took it away. So,
right.
you know, for me, I only know slow. So it's like, but I guess the second I get that faster submarine, it'll be a whole different game.
God, that would have been so mean, wouldn't it? If like they had like just that yeah. intro tutorial level, like as soon as you turn on the game, it throws you in, like have this really awesome sub, and then you get to the main game and you have to use the base one.
Yeah, that's it. And that rings a bell. I mean, I think there's games that have done that before. I can't think one off the top of my head, but you know, not with submarines, but with something like either a car or, you know, something. But yeah, that would be, I'd be pretty mad.
The Metroid method of introducing you to a game. Like, hey, yeah, there's all these awesome powers, and now they're gone.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, you know, you run through a tutorial level, and then, like you said, boom, you have nothing now.
Yep. So we've been going for a while now. You wanna get into some speed runs, or you should call it quits?
Yeah, I can mention it briefly. You know, yeah. is speed running something that, you know, it's been around for a while. It seems to have been, you know, it seems to be picking up some popularity. I mean, especially with Twitch and stuff. You know, a lot of people do it. I have several guys I follow. You know, Inop, he's the world record Majora's Mask holder. You know, Goron guy's another guy that on Twitch. He's like ranked 4 in the world for Majora's Mask and like maybe 6 in the world for Ocarina of Time. So I watch a lot of Zelda speed running. And I watch the guy named Benny or Blenny. He's the world record Mario 64. But you know, I personally, like I've got a capture card, an AverMedia game, it was a AverMedia live gamer portable capture card that I have connected to my Wii U, and I stream to my Twitch channel. And you know, I play lots of Monster Hunter on there, some Call of Duty on there, but you know, I started recently doing some 16-star runs with Super Mario 64, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, Super Mario 64, hands down, is my favorite Mario game of all time. I mean, it's hard to pick one, but I picked this one. It's just something that, you know, I'm feel very close to, but it's just a lot of fun. You know, I don't think right now I couldn't speed run Zelda game because I don't have that kind of patience with playing it over and over and over. For some reason I do with Mario 64. I don't think I could speed run a 2D Mario game right now because, I mean, obviously they're a little harder. This one gives me a little bit more freedom, you know, with a 3D Mario than a 2D one as far as speed running and doing different things, because I don't have a set path. I can just kind of make my own through all these levels. But you know, there's a website called speedrunslive.com, And then there's an archive, speedrunsdemos.com, and every day they have races, and they post them. And basically what you can do is you can go out there, and they have all these different games, you know, like even classic games like Zombies Ate My Neighbors, and you know, of course, like Zeldas and you know, 3DS games from all different platforms, even computer games. And, you know, and Mario 64 is one on their list, and they'll do these races, these six, you know, and you basically sign up for it. You put your Twitch information in there, you sign up for it, and then at, like, say, 2 p.m. it starts. And, you know, you got, like, 9, 10 guys, 30 guys, you know, racing, and it puts it all on there. It compares their stats. And actually, for the first time, won a race. I've only been, you know, speedrunning for maybe a month now doing Mario 64. But, you know, I did 16-star race, which the world record for that is 20 minutes and 9 seconds. You know, I broke 29 minutes. I hit 29 minutes and 8 seconds, which, you know, 9 minutes away from the world record. I mean, that doesn't sound like much, but it's still a long time because, you know, to me, playing, I did everything, like, I consider perfect. I mean, I didn't die any. I didn't mess up once. I mean, there was obviously, like, rewatching the video, you know, there's, at the time I was, you know, when I rewatch it, like I said, I'm like, man, I could have done this, save time, I could have done this, save time. And that's always the fun of speedrunning. But at the time when I'm playing it, you know, there are times when you run and you realize, hey, I made a mistake, I fell in the lava, I died, you know, it's like I've wasted so much time, you know, I fell off the mountain. You know, but there wasn't anything like that. So just knowing that I was 9 minutes behind the world record, I mean, the guy that did the world record is insane. I'll never get there just because I probably never, you know, I mean, I'll keep trying to beat my own record, but, you know, it's just a lot of fun. I mean, I won that race. It was cool. I guess it got me some street cred, but, you know, it got me a lot of viewers and followers on my channel, but, you know, I'll probably stay with Mario 64 and just watch others speedrun other games, you know, Majora's Mask, and you know, the world record for that is 1 hour and 29 minutes beating Majora's Mask, which is crazy. Shit. And you know, Link Between Worlds, you know, the world record for that now is 2 hours, which is also crazy.
Wow, so, already?
Yeah, it was 4 hours for a while, and I think, like, last month, two guys, and Nora is the record holder. ZeldaSpeedruns.com is the site that, you know, Zelda is such a big speedrunning category that they've branched off into their own site, but it's ZeldaSpeedruns.com. You can compare the stats and stuff, and, yeah, it's like 2 hours and maybe 30 minutes for Link Between Worlds. It's crazy. It's something different, something fun to do.
Yeah, the only thing that I ever got into speedrunning was I used to try to speedrun New Super Mario Bros. Wii. And yeah. I actually got it to where I could beat it in like 32 minutes, which I of course have no proof for because I wasn't capturing anything. But it'd be kind of fun to capture it and like dust off the cobwebs and see if I can get there. And you mentioned like having to use like creative methods to get through the game. There was actually a point in the game where I would intentionally like make myself smaller, like intentionally run into enemies because there are passages you can only get through when you're small Mario. And you know, it's just really cool to see like people exploit that kind of stuff where something that you wouldn't think would be an advantage it becomes an advantage when you're trying to get through the game faster.
Yeah, oh yeah. And a lot of speedruns too, and you know, I also played you know, New Super Mario Bros. Wii, because it had the built-in speedruns, you know, which was really cool. I think that was the one, right, that had the built-in speedrun timers for the levels.
Was that the, shoot, I don't remember, was that the Wii U one or the Wii one?
I have to go back. I was thinking the Wii one did, because not for like the whole game, but I remember it had a speedruns category. And you go in and you race the levels and it compares the time, you know. And it may have been New Super Mario Bros. U, but I could have sworn the Wii one had something very similar as well.
Okay.
I really don't know. Yeah, but there's different categories, of course, with races. Like there's, you'll probably, you know, people will see, you know, any percent, which means you know, just beat the game as fast as possible, doesn't matter. And then there's 100% where you beat the game at 100%. And certain, you know, certain games, there's stipulations for what 100% is, like a Majora's Mask. You know, for those that haven't played it, you know, you have 3 days to beat the game. When you play the reverse Song of Time or the Song of Time, you go back in time. So what they consider 100% in Majora's Mask is, you know, what you keep with you when you play the Song of Time and go back in time. You know, the stuff you lose, it doesn't count. So they consider all the stuff that's more solid.
So like your heart pieces and your masks, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Just getting all the masks, you know, getting all the hearts and, you know, weapons and stuff like that. But bottles, yes. Certain items like the pose and stuff, yeah. No, because those go away unless you turn them in. And money is another thing. You can store money in a bank, but that's not a, you know, item you 100% or anything. But it's fun. It's fun to do. It's something that I've always watched people do, but, you know, only recently when I got my capture card, decided to do it myself.
All right, very cool. Well, I think that's going to bring this show to a close. Before we do close out, are there any games upcoming pretty soon that you're really looking forward to?
Yeah, Yoshi's New Island, I pre-ordered it at my local Toys R Us, and I'll be buying that game Friday when I get off work. As far as close by, I mean, of course, Mario Kart 8, you know, Smash Brothers X, stuff like that. But, you know, as far as what's coming up soon, that's definitely the next purchase. Had to take a look at a calendar to see what else is close.
Did you see, I think like 30 minutes before we started recording, the Yacht Club Games announced that Shovel Knight is delayed.
What? I did not see that. That makes me so upset. Oh, dude, man. How long, do you know?
They're hoping just a few weeks.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, well, they didn't give a definitive date again, but yeah, it's a little sad, but yeah. Hopefully it won't be too long.
And that's, I mean, I follow that game, but I pledged. I'm not sure. I pledged money for Shovel Knight. So I'm supposed to get. I think I have to look at it again, but I think I pledged. I think 20 or 30, maybe. 25, I have to look, but I'm supposed to get some kind of physical copy of it in the mail, so I'm not really sure. I have to look at it again. It's been a few months, because they've done a couple changes to it, as far as what I'm going to get, not really taking anything away, but just kind of changing what it is, and stuff. But yeah, it they look good. I mean, I like WayForward a lot, you know, and you know, it's a different, you know, these guys branched off and made a different studio, but I feel like they're gonna take some of the classic WayForward stuff and you know, and go with it, you know. I think they're gonna do real good. So
yeah,
that's definitely another, you know, Shovel Knight's another game. But yeah, I really have to, I mean, there's so many different games I look into and get, but definitely the next game is Yoshi's New Island. You know, I had Yoshi, you know, I still have, you know, Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island on, you know, Super Nintendo, and loved it, you know, still love it. So that's the game that stuck with me, and, you know, it's a game I can't wait to play this one on the 3DS.
All right, well, why don't we close it out on that note? So, why don't you tell everyone where they can, like, if you're on Twitter or anything like that, or where they can find you on Miiverse, all that good stuff.
Yeah, man. Like I said, my name is Jody Ingram. You know, on Twitter, you know, you can probably just, you know, look up Twitter as Jody Ingram, but I'm on Twitter, I'm The Crusher. It's THCRUSH3R. So it's just like, you know, the E's have been replaced with threes. And, you know, on Twitch, I'm the word spelled out Spherical Crusher. So it's twitch.tv/Spherical Crusher. That's my Twitch page. But, yeah, I'm definitely on Twitter. I mean, I'm on Facebook. I'm on all these different social media sites. And, you know, I'm on Google Plus. I don't really use it, but I'm there. But, yeah, I mostly use Twitter and you know, Facebook and stuff.
Yeah, you kind of have to join Google Plus when you make a Gmail account now.
Exactly. They force you to, so.
So, yeah, so you can find me on Miiverse. That's really the only kind of social thing that I really get involved in. Find me at Johnnyboy, JonnyBoy. So if you listen to the show, definitely, like, send me a friend request or at least follow me.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, yeah, I'm on Meverse as well. That's probably, aside from Twitter, that's my main one, because I check it constantly, as you do, throughout the day on my cell phone with the web app and stuff. But yeah, my same thing is Spherical Crusher on Meverse on Nintendo on Nintendo Network. I'm out there as well.
All right, so thanks for listening, everybody. Till next. Oh, and Jody, thanks so much for joining me on this show.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, and I really enjoyed it. So.
All right, till next time, everybody. We'll be right back.